Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. My name is Nick Campbell, and with us is Chad Ashley, also from Grayscale Gorilla. Funny that. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Wow, wonderful. Happy Monday to you all. And also from Grayscale Gorilla, we got a theme going today. You know what? We should change the name of the podcast. Chris Schmidt, how are you?
I'm doing quite well.
You looking good? You got your Twitch swag? You feeling good?
Yeah, my Twitch. I like it.
Dude, all right. Your lighting is also making me jealous. So I'm going to put this on my to-do list.
I lucked out. I had Chad come over and set up my lighting.
That's really the secret. Let me give you guys a real quick tip. If you guys are struggling in Cinema 4D with your lighting, or if you're struggling with your lighting in your room, your office, just hire Chad Ashley.
I'll come to your house for a nominal fee.
Cookies.
Yeah, send him a scene file. He'll tell you where how to make it better. Or have him over. Make some cookies, and he'll set up your lights for you.
I just want to go to your office, Nick, because I like what you got going on the right side.
Yeah.
But you got to finish this thing.
I know. I'm feeling
it's very imbalanced right now.
No, my wife is with you. You guys got to start like a Facebook campaign. It is unfinished. I'm going to get something nice over here, but we'll get there. It's slow. At least it's not a blank wall anymore. I'll give you that.
That's true. I mean, and for me, like I'm excited about Half-Res, and we definitely are going to talk about that, mostly because I'm going to get to add another Half-Res deck to my back wall. For those of you just listening and you've never seen the show, my back wall is just filled with skateboards, and one of my favorite skateboards is my Half-Res 5 skateboard. And soon, next to it is going to be a Half-Res 6.
No. You keep the Half-Res 5 one, and I get to put the Half-Res 6
no,
on.
No, no, wait.
So that way, listen, if there's anybody, I know, you actually skated. I'm just a poser. I just like the art. Dang it. Okay. Well,
a kickflip contest, and whoever wins gets to put the skateboard up.
Are you going to steal another one of the signs, Chad?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Left here.
Yeah. I also have another one over there, but I'm not going to go grab it. Yeah, I love the signs too, so I'm going to try to stick around and steal stuff at the end.
Well, I'll tell you, we've already talked about what the main topic is this week, and it's going to be a fun one. We're going to get to it really fast, but we do have to talk about Half-Res because it is this week. It is this Wednesday, and if you have your ticket, man, we're excited to see you. And if you don't have a ticket and you want to be at Half-Res, don't forget to go to halfres.com, sign up, because you'll have first access to the next group of for Half-Res next year when we sell those tickets. So don't forget. It's going to be a huge one. Almost 400 people are signed up, ready to go. So we are pumped. We are pumped. I know the site says something like 350 or something like that, but there's a ton of behind the scenes people and people helping out and sponsors and all that. So it's going to approach 400 people. We're really pumped. It's one of my favorite days of the entire year, just to be able to meet everybody, have conversations with artists from all around and just have a beer and relax and also learn some stuff too. We got some awesome guests coming up. We got Devin Coe hitting the stage at Half-Res this year, and she's been doing the 3D for designer stuff and been killing it lately. So we wanted to have her out to talk about some of the stuff she's been working on. And then Chris Doe, I don't think we talked about this last week. It's official. We have our lineup. Chris is also going to come on stage. We're going to do an interview, talk about some of the things he's working on with the future and all the other awesome educational stuff that he's been doing. I watched his typography video, and man, I am never great at typography, and it's always something I struggle with. And I watched his recent one and was really learning a lot. I'm excited. So anyway, that's Half-Res. Anything else? What are you guys excited about Half-Res? It's your favorite part, man.
Yeah, it's super crazy. I've been dreaming Half-Res lately, trying to get everything ready. And me and Ivan spent pretty much the entire weekend trying to set some special stuff up for this year's Cube races. But to see what we're doing, you'll just have to be there.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. And hey, just this is an ongoing feature of the podcast now. Chris has lost his main mic. It's unplugged or something. But you know what? He fixed it last time in just like 5 seconds. So hopefully in just a few, you'll be hearing the big bassy version of Chris instead of the little
little toy box
version. Chad, you're coming to Half Res. I'm excited to see you guys. That's going to be a big part of the stoked. Fun as well.
I'm stoked because I'm going to actually stay downtown for 2 days. So I'm stoked about that. I'm stoked about seeing everybody. I'm stoked about seeing the speakers. I'm just excited to see everyone and talk to everyone. And it's just a really fun time. So I'm excited.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a little bit family reunion for us because, you know, a few years ago, we all started working from home instead of at the office together. So, you know, it's kind of nice to see everybody, hang out with everybody, and it turns into a whole week. So we got to talk about Half-Res. Again, if you're coming, come say hi and let us know what you think about the podcast too. We're especially people listening to this that are going to be at Half-Res. You know, we always enjoy doing the show and we'd like to hear from you guys as well. What you get out of it, what you want us to talk more about too, because that's our goal. Our goal is to help the motion designer get more work that they love and get paid enough to make a living out of this thing. And if you're further on down your career, our goal is to get you better clients. It's to, you know, think about ways to grow your income, to get that raise, to start to become a freelancer or wherever this path is taking you. We want to be a part of it. We want to help. That's the goal. Chris, you got bassy Chris again or what?
Testing the mic. Am I here?
Oh, you sound good.
I don't know what happened. The icon popped up and I turned it off. I didn't know I was gone though. Sorry about that.
No, you're back at it.
You're back now. That's what matters.
I appreciate it. Well, anything else? Any news this week that I know R19 is launched? It is out. It is being used. I think we talked about that a little bit last week, but I know that's always a big part of the year. That's also kind of why we put Half-Res around this time of year too, everybody together and learn a little bit about the new version of Cinema. So that'll be fun. Any other news before we move to some topics?
Nothing jumps out at me. I think the main title Emmy went to Stranger Things, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I did see that the technical Emmys were
last night or Saturday, one of those two. So yeah, you should go check out the winners there. A lot of great work, but I'm pretty sure the Stranger Things title won for main title. But again, if I'm wrong, correct me in the comments. We all want to know. I guess I should have looked that up before the show, but just Half-Res, man, just got all excited.
That'd be a fun thing. Maybe we should talk about that next week or something. Get the list and kind of talk about some of those things, because that is a big part of our industry. The title sequence stuff, all the technical Emmys that happen. And it's never on the night of the show. They kind of do a little 5-minute bit about the technical Emmys. That's usually when I start standing up. If I'm at my friend's house, I'm like, this is the part where they give Emmys to people. Like I might know these people. They're like, shut up, Nick. We want more actors. I'm like, no,
I'm telling you. And then the technical Emmys, they always get like some comedian or something to host, and they don't know anything about what they're talking about, and it's really horribly awkward. Those are funny.
I have to share because it's been so much fun. My wife's been asking questions about when we watch a movie. She's like, okay, what is that? Is that motion graphics? Is that special effects? Is that visual effects? Is that computer generated? And we've been talking more about it, and it's been really interesting. It's been very fun to try to define some of these things, because some of them in my head, I'm like, of course, there's like a really clear definition between like what is visual effects and what's motion graphics and what's special effects and what's, you know what I mean? Like I mm-hmm. thought there'd be a really easy way to explain this. And like anytime you try to teach something, you realize how less clear you think you are than when they repeat it back to you. And so it's been really fun to go like, okay, yes, that is computer generated and it is motion graphics, but it's also visual effects in this way, you know, and without any specific examples, this is probably pretty boring, but for me, it's been very fun because it's like, we'll pause the movie and be like, okay, how is that done? And she's like, oh, okay, I think it's computer
watching
generated.
A movie is like 3 hours process, 4 hour process.
Listen, when it comes to movies, with me and my wife watching them, they do turn in, it's about a 2x process. Like we know if it's an hour and a half movie, it's probably going to be a 3-hour movie. because there's a lot of pausing and discussion. There's also a lot of pausing and looking up like who all the actors are. My wife is always like, I know that actor.
Interesting. You do that during the movie. Like you'll during pause the movie.
That's yeah. Crazy.
I will never watch a movie with you.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like at my house, we watch a movie and then we might have a 2-hour discussion afterward about all the different details and deconstructing it, but not during the movie.
It's tough. You know what? It's tough, but it's also, I have my bits of it because I also go like pause it and go, did you see that? Did you see how they did that? This that effect that they actually probably like put the rain in front of the camera. It probably wasn't raining. It was just water over the lens. And so for anybody else out there, you are more than welcome not to watch a movie with us. But I totally understand. But we love it. We geek out on that stuff. But I'm gonna try this thing that you said, Chris. After the movie, I'm gonna see if we can pull that off. We're both gonna have pages of notes.
You're both taking notes during it. That would be great.
There you go. That's how you solve the problem. And then you revisit it later and you say, remember this one thing at time code this?
That's good. Maybe we record those. Have you guys ever done, I know I'm going off on a tangent already. We got to get to our topic. Have you guys ever done a secondary audio track on a movie? Like
commentary?
Yeah. So it's similar to a DVD commentary, but it's kind of like unauthorized. It's more like if we wanted to do our own commentary on a movie, we could all sit around and then tell the listener, okay, we're hitting play now. Okay. And the MGM lion just roared now. And then we just talk about what we want to talk about for the whole movie and then put that out as like a piece of audio. Have you guys ever done this?
I haven't done it. I've listened to said things.
You haven't done it like with the movie directly?
Oh, I'm listening to those tracks if I already know the movie very well. And then I don't have to be watching the movie while the commentary track's going. So I can listen to it like a podcast.
Then you already know what's coming up.
Yeah.
Okay. Those have been interesting too. Those have been very interesting to me. Not just listening to them, but like who would be the coolest people to make some of those? Like who would you want to be in a room with while they talked over the movie? But you guys already said you don't want anybody to talk over the movie.
I mean, if it's a movie I've already seen, then that's fine. But like if it's something that I'm like trying to watch for the first time and experience, then I would find that to be distracting. But I mean, the closest thing that I can think of is something like that I've done is like Mystery Science Theater. Like, but that's completely different. But that's kind of like the only experience that I have with something like that, I guess.
That's fun.
Anyway,
that's fun. All right. Well, let's jump into it. We have our main topic here. Chad, do you want to set this one up? I think Trevor was talking to you about this, right?
Yeah. So I got an interesting topic idea from my buddy Trevor Kerr, and he said he was talking about blank page thinking and eventually kind of like landed on this idea for the podcast, which would be to talk about the idea of not being too precious with your work. And it started with blank page thinking and then eventually kind of morphed into talking about how not to get too emotionally attached to your work, client work. Because ultimately, it doesn't really belong to you, but that process can be really difficult for people, and myself included, when you work on something and you become so emotionally attached to an idea that hasn't even been turned into something real yet. How do you not want to just like crawl into a corner, into a ball, and just scream whenever it gets changed or the fundamental idea of what your idea becomes something different? But, which I think a lot of creative people struggle with that.
Yeah, I'll frame it from the aspect of a student and a new animator and also even a seasoned animator and kind of describe the same thing, which is exactly what you're saying, Chad, but it's that attachment. And as a student, I remember this feeling of staying up all night, working really hard on this project or this design or this thing that I was really starting to dig. It's like, I remember one of the first projects I actually looked at and really liked the way it looked, where up to that point, I was like, none of my stuff looked good. Like I didn't know how to make it look good. So I was really working really hard to make this look better. And I was really proud of it. It was light years ahead of anything that I've made before. And I show up to class and it gets torn apart, like really, really heavily, like, you know, bad design here. And there's too much, you know, you use the entirely wrong font for this. And it got torn apart. And I needed that. Like, I needed that process. But that was a personal moment for me where I was so attached to the work where I'm like, well, you know what? Screw you then. Luckily, I had a lot of early mentors that showed me that that is all, like, that's the most valuable feedback in the whole entire world that most people will never tell you to your face, which is that this needs to be better. And so I quickly, as a student, learned to kind of embrace that work. But even when I started or embrace that feedback, but it doesn't get easier, right? Like, that sting of your creative director or the client or somebody telling you like this needs to change is can be hard because you're so wrapped up into it. You put all these hours into it. And so I guess I just wanted to frame it up that at every level, I've felt this for sure. And maybe what we talk about today are some of the ways to think about it, or are some of the ways to detach yourself from the work, because I think that that is important to remember that, you know, that the work doesn't represent you. And we could talk about some of the ways to do that. And then I think just sharing stories of that happening to us can also be helpful, because people understanding out there, listeners, I should say, understanding that this just happens to everybody and it's something you have to figure out how to deal with emotionally is it's hard. And I think even just hearing stories might be helpful. So does that make sense? Kind of set that up?
Totally. Yeah.
Sweet. So, all right. When's the last time you cried because of the client?
What day is it? Yeah, I mean, and not only that, but too, like when Trevor and I were talking, we landed also on this story that we've read from John Lasseter at Pixar. When a new director or someone is pitching a movie idea at Pixar, they make them come in the room with three ideas, not just one. And the reason being is because you never know where something's going to end up or where it's going to lead. And if you put all your eggs into one basket and you sort of like focus entirely on one idea and it doesn't work out and that idea is just not really good, and you just can't see the forest. What's that saying? You can't see the forest through the trees. Is it through the trees?
Yep.
And that's really what happens when you focus on one idea and you just think it's the best idea ever. And you walk in that room and you say, this is my idea for my movie. And it's going to go like this. And then it's going to do this. And this guy's going to go over here. And then, you know, somebody at Pixar says, okay, well, that's not really doing it for me. What else you got? And then they're like, that's all I got. And then you go out of the door and you don't have a movie. So the idea here is that don't treat your idea or even your project, I guess, with such... help me with the word here. Don't treat it with such, I don't know, preciousness. Is that a word? Sure.
Yeah,
don't be so precious, because ideas are meant to be slapped around. They're meant to be thrown up on a wall and torn down and changed and whatever. And that's what that lesson is. Like, come into the room with three ideas and don't overthink it, and be ready to change them. Be ready to tweak them, because you never know what another person's input is going to due to it. It might change it for the better, hopefully. But yeah, just thought I'd throw that out there too.
Yeah, I mean, it could somebody else's opinion can make it change it for the better, change it for the worse. But either way, detaching yourself from that process that your idea is you, I think that's really where it comes from, is this attachment. Like, it's almost like if you were to that was almost another bad Nick analogy, but I'll save that one. I got to think about that. One. That was almost going to be good. But it is, I just know from experience, like, you stay up, you're the one putting the hours in. You're the one thinking about this stuff. You're the one, that knows like what this looks like and feels like in your head. And so when you say it out loud, there's a lot of things that could go wrong. It could have just been like, you didn't explain it well enough, or if it's an actual piece of work, it just might not be their taste. Like, there's just so many ways that you can start to remove yourself from being disappointed that somebody else has opinion. I know for me, it was always the fact, especially with clients, it was the fact that they're paying us to like make their thing. Like, they're the client, and our job is to make it as good as we can and inform them and do the things that we think is right. But at the end of the day, we're providing a service, and they're the ones that are going to walk out with this box under their arm. And yeah, ultimately they are the one that we need to make happy. And we can, there are a lot of ways to, you know, do both and do things for your clients to try and help. But at the end of the day, that helped me remove myself from the process, is remembering that it's theirs.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different layers to this one. Just whenever you're doing any kind of creative work, and if somebody knows a word for this, if you guys know, or if somebody in the comments can put it, there's got to be a word for it. When you're actively working on something, or you're just wrapping something up, and you're blinded to what you're looking at. The kind of thing where you come back an hour later, a day later, a week later, a year later, you're like, oh my God, this is so terrible. And I remember loving this so much while I was working on it. And when somebody else walks up and you've got these, you know, googly eyes for your own work, and somebody said something, they're saying what you might say tomorrow, but they're saying it right now when you're in love with it. And then it's very personal, where you're excited and you're attached to it, and all you're seeing is all this potential, and they're seeing a clearer reality of it and you're not. So you got to be careful about showing something off when you're very, very attached to it, if you're not like preparing yourself for that open feedback. But at the same time, I have found a phenomenon, which maybe there's another word for this one, where you're super attached to it, and then right as you ask somebody, it's like, hey, come take a look at this. The instant they're standing there, they don't have to say a word, and you suddenly are like out of your head, and you're thinking about what they might be thinking, and suddenly you're like, wait, go away. That was good enough. I've got my feedback. I got to make some changes, and then I'll bring you back in an hour or two.
Just that little switch takes you out of like an out-of-body experience, where then at that split moment you can like look at it from their perspective and be like, oh yeah, he's probably gonna, okay, you know what, just go away. I'll just fix this.
Yeah, I've had that experience with music so many times, where I tell a friend of mine, you're gonna love this band, you're gonna love this song, oh, this song's so good, and it's like the song that you've been listening to like all week, and then you put it on, and then the two of you are just standing in the room or like in a car together, and it starts off kind of quiet, you know, and all of a sudden your brain is like, do they like it? Wait, I forgot. They don't like 80s strings. Oh, fuck. And then you're going through the whole thing. Yeah. And now you're listening to it through their ears and realizing they are not vibing with this. That is an interesting way to think of it. But it also shows that we are tricking ourselves. Like, our brain is tricking ourselves to make us fall in love with this thing that we're working on. And in some ways, we need that. Like, we need that moment to be obsessed with this project, but we do also need the ability to flip that switch and be very analytical and be very open to change and seeing it through others' eyes. So maybe
that's the formula for being a good creative. I think you nailed it right there. It's like you have to maximize and harness that energy that you feel when you first start working on something or first start doing it. And you have to really embrace that, because that's the fun part. That's the part that gets you excited, that makes you want to get up early and go into the office or whatever and start working on it again. But you also, on the other hand, you have to have that flip side to the coin, where you have to be able to step away and critically look at your work and be able to make those calls and say, well, I think I could do this better. I think that maybe this is going to be confusing, or this could be faster or slower. Because if you can put both of those two together, I think you'll be happier and you'll be more successful. But it's hard to do.
Yeah, I would, if you want more comfort, I would watch like behind the scenes of Pixar stuff and hear the stories of storyboards and entire characters and entire sets of films that they've built and animated and did the whole thing. And at the very end, the director came in and we're like, this scene does not make sense for this movie. And we're over 10 minutes and we got to cut something. And this scene is really, you did a great job, but we're just removing this entire thing from the movie. Like, understand that happens. Like, those things break my heart just to hear about them. But understanding that at the end, they're trying to serve the story, or they're trying to like literally hit a number that is like a number that people will, like families will watch a movie sometimes. Like understanding that there are hard limits, and that sometimes there's damage. There's like on the cutting room floor, all the work that was done. Or imagine a modeler that like worked really hard on this model and got every detail right and sweat it, the whole thing. They did all this work and then they hand it over to the lighting artist, or they hand it over to the like the director, like the cinematographer, like how it's going to be a part of the scene. And in the final movie, it's like blurry and like and like silhouetted. Yeah. Right, it's like a blurry silhouette, and they're like, I spent hours trying to get the screws all perfect and the little bevels, and they made it a silhouette, and it's all motion blurred. But if you could step back and go, oh wow, that actually made that that ship more, you know, impressive looking or spooky looking or whatever, you have to understand that those things are always going to happen to your work.
But still, I get that vibe, whatever. You know, when you watch like those little time lapses where you see like an After Effects comp and you see like all the layers getting layered on top of each other, and or any kind of time lapse with that, as you get to the later stages, you're seeing all of the work that just gets hidden in shadow. And it's just like behind the layer of mist. And like you said, out of focus, it just disappears entirely. And for that moment, like I feel bad for the artist whose work is getting silhouetted, and yeah. know that your work is appreciated.
Yeah, that reminds me of a story about, I think it was War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise. I think it was that one where there, or maybe it was a different Tom Cruise movie. Maybe it was one of the Mission Impossible movies. Anyway, some building, might have been Mission Impossible, gets destroyed. And like, I remember reading an article about the sim artist that like just poured over every detail of this building coming down and being destroyed. Every window was cracking. Every brick was breaking. Every bit of this building was just coming apart dynamically, like completely realistic. And then it went, so he finished his part, and then it went to the smoke effects team, and the whole thing just got just smoke over everything. So every little bit that he put into it, every little ounce of detail was just covered in soot and dust. And that really kind of sums up that that whole mentality. Is like, I'm sure that a lot of artists, wasn't just one person, made the building crumble, but you know, they, cool man, that's what made the shot look cooler, awesome, moving on to my next job. And if you don't have that attitude, you'll just want to crawl into that corner into a ball and just die.
Well, not only that, if you don't embrace the ability for that to change or be put into other hands and it becomes something else, like think of the consequences of doing the opposite. Imagine being like, nope, my model is beautiful and perfect, and I put every little detail, we're going to show it in full frame all the time. And like, you're not going to get any emotional response from anybody. It's the Jaws phenomenon. If they had shown their awesome shark over and over and over again, it wouldn't have been scary. By giving you these tiny little hints, everybody remembers it.
Mm-hmm. Which was a complete accident, by the way.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it's like the most famous like movie story. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think you've talked about this, Chad, with all the car models. You go and you make all these beautiful car models, and you want to show like every edge and every little detail. But a car render is very different from a car model. A car render is you're just seeing light highlights like poking up in all these different spots, and it's all silhouette and like the sexy angles. If you're showing a model of a car, you should put on a turntable and spin around and then show the lighting, because that's what's going to sell it.
Sure. Yep.
So let me ask you guys, because I think this is something that a lot of artists struggle with. You work, you get the job, or you get the bid, or you're working wherever you're working, and you're getting something for the client to look at or for your boss to look at, and you work on it, work on it, work at it, and it's looking good, and they come back with feedback. Okay, either the feedback is from the client or from the boss, and it's like, listen, we need to go in a completely different direction. This needs to change. This needs to change. And what they're pointing out is all the stuff you worked on and worked so hard on. And they're basically giving you that thing I feel like so many of us have felt, which is you're ruining it. All these ideas, whether they're right or wrong, this internal feeling of like, well, I can go do all that, but you just buzzkilled the whole thing, man. What do you do? Like, what I know the answer is like, go do it physically, but what do you do mentally to prepare yourself or think about that stuff and set up for those kind of like inevitable letdowns that that just happen? Do you have a way of like going through those, that that thought process?
I mean, that can be super tough. At my previous job, in the previous life, that became the norm, where I had all these different project managers that had come directly to me, and they all had different styles. And you slowly learn over time the different styles of different project managers. So there's one person, whatever you gave him, loved it right away. Boom, great. Maybe put this thing in there. Cool, perfect, love it. But then other people, the opposite end of the spectrum was, they didn't know what they wanted, but they knew what they didn't want. So you'd have to make something quickly, show it to them, and then they'd be like, okay, cool. Now I know what I want because I know what I don't want. So like I learned with that one, don't get precious at all. You can't get specific. Like make something, throw it out. They like realistic, give it to them. But then it is, I don't even have a good answer for what do you do when something that you do love and you think is great and you love it on all the different levels, and they come and they make a fundamental change where it's killed your love for it. And I think it really, the only thing I can think of is either like be careful about not getting super attached early on, or just start plowing through. And I think you might fall back in love with it again. Like if there's a new direction and new things you can attach to it. But even then I'd be on guard for, well, it's probably going to change again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're right. That I think you fundamentally that problem is such a. I mean, I just got depressed just hearing you describe it, because I've lived it so many times that like it never gets easier. It never gets easier, and it's even worse, I'd say, if it was your concept. Like, So I worked at a studio where we would be pitching our own creative. And if your own creative gets selected, and it's like, that's just a victory unto itself. And then you can start to work on it. And then it when those things happen and the client ruins it in your eyes or the rest of the team's eyes, it's really hard to be motivated to finish it out. It's so hard because it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, and you have to almost pace your your enthusiasm. So one thing that has happened to me more times than I would care to admit is a redirect by the client for reasons unknown to me, sometimes known to me. And as the CD, I would have to be in the call with the client when they're saying, oh yeah, our idea changed, or our direction changed, or our focus changed. And I would have to walk back to the team and tell them that all the work that they had put in that week and stayed late for and busted their ass on was all for nothing. That's really hard to do. It's hard to hear it. It's hard to be the one to tell it. So
yeah, you're the middleman in that.
Yeah, and if it was
tough too.
And if it was my concept, like I have that on top of it, like, okay, well that sucks. You just completely it's not our concept anymore. It's like some bullshit that we don't even want to do. So every time that this would happen, and this would happen more often than I said, I'd like to admit, I'd go back and I'd say, hey guys, let's go out. Let's get out of the office for a few hours. And they'd be like, okay. And we would go, we'd go either for coffee or we'd go out to lunch, and I would just break it down for them. Like, hey man, this is what happened. They're kind of sucking the life out of this thing. We got to start over on this. We've got to start over on this. And then we'd all just bitch about it for 2 hours, and we'd just get it all out of our system. And we would all just be like, this sucks. They just completely ruined it. Like, I don't even want to. And we'd bitch about it for 2 hours. And then eventually we'd go through that mourning period. And then we'd be like, but at least we still get to learn this, or we still get to sneak this in. And we could do this for our own reel. Like maybe we do this version for us. And you start to like try to find those little things to get that engine going again. And then hopefully you come back from that 2 hour lunch a little buzzed.
I was going to say, how much drinking was going on during this?
Hopefully a little buzzed. And then you're back in it. And you, or there's those times that just suck. And like you just, you're never going to feel the same because the client is just unreasonable and it just never is going to be the same. And that's when you just like say, okay, let's just bear down and like just grind through the rest of this deadline and get it out the door. Do as much as we can that will get it to the finish line as fast as possible. There's those times too, which are never fun.
Yeah. So it's like a breakup, you know, like you have to go through the process and get out of it and come out renewed with like a new energy, like a new way to look at it. I like the way that you said that, like take the time to mourn it almost, like just understand that that's a part of the process, that you're going to be mad, go be mad, and then come back and get your, do your job. Right. That's big. And I was just thinking like you were in the middle, you were probably had to go deliver those things more than you wanted to. How many of those conversations did you go talk to your team and you actually saw something different than what they did? In other words, they thought that they did it all right and it was all looking good, and you had to come say, actually, this isn't the right way to do it. And it wasn't your concept that got messed up. It was theirs. Do you have a way to even approach that, or a way to talk to creatives? Because I think you are in a great place for that, because you're a creative yourself and you know that this is a big deal, but you also know like this needs to look better or be more on brand or whatever. Right. Does that make sense? That question? Like,
yeah, that's what you're basically asking is like, how do you, it goes in my opinion, to that, falls into that category of how to be a good creative director. And I think that's a huge part of it, is being able to deliver that feedback or deliver those notes in a way that doesn't hopefully make the artist, you know, want to quit. And I think for me, I'm just really pretty brutally honest with people, but I also try to elevate people's points of view, or at least change their point of view so they could see it from either my perspective or the client's perspective, so they could see why they're making these calls, which was good and bad, because then you always have those clients that just their changes make absolutely no sense and they just are not improving the product at all. And you can't defend those decisions. So those are the times where you're just like, all right, let's just bear down and do it. Get it out the door. Fuck it. But getting back to your original question, usually what I would do is I would say, well, okay, so you made this call and you thought this color was right and it's not right, and here's why it's not right. And if you can deliver that in a way that is very much about the color and not about them, and it's not a personal attack on their decision, but here's why this color is wrong, because actually that color is being used over here. And if you can see the relationship between the background and the foreground, that color is not really making it pop. So we need this color to be different, because we really need this part to pop, because this is what we're selling at this part. We want people's eyes to go here. Give them the reasons. Give them the backstory. Don't just say, change this because I like this color, or I think this color works better. Give them the ability to learn from that and say to themselves, next time I'm going to put this in front of the creative director or the client, I'm going to look at this and I'm going to say, what would they think? Is that color popping? Is this the focus of the shot? Should I be looking here? Are my eyeballs going to the right place? And if you start to give direct feedback like that, you're basically arming them to be able to give you better work in the future, because they're hopefully going to go through those filters in their head before they put it in front of you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I like what you're saying too, because it's, you're also not putting the two together again. Like the work and the person, they're already tied to it. And it sounds to me like you're going out of your way to like make sure that language doesn't enter into it. So rather than like, you messed up, or this isn't, like you made the wrong decision, you just look at the decision as if it's been made, whoever made it, like you, it needs to be changed, and this is why it's not the right decision. But we don't necessarily go say you messed up over and over again, right? Like, that's the wrong way to approach it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's never like that. I mean, the only time that I would reprimand a mistake is if it was like, you know, some really something that I thought that person should never have, should, you know, oh, that's a rookie mistake. You're way too seasoned to be able to make, to have made that mistake. But we all make mistakes. Shit, I make mistakes. I made mistakes all the time. But I don't really, I think there's mistakes and then there's just, there's tweaks. They're not the same thing. I mean, a mistake can get fixed. A mistake has a clear solution, but a tweak in a creative process, it's like you're in a dark room and you're just trying to find your way. There's no wrong way to navigate a dark room other than maybe just like, you know, well, there really isn't. You're feeling your way around. If your approach is to run as fast as you can, so you smash your face into the wall and then you know not to go that direction, great. Then you've just navigated a dark room. But I think it's just, it's about trying to remember the mistakes that you've made, or not mistakes, again, I don't want to use that word, but remember what worked before and applying that same knowledge going forward, I think is an important thing to do.
That I like that analogy a lot, because when you get out of the room and you finally get to the end and it's a better piece for it, you can look back and really easily go, oh, I just should have made that decision in the first place, you know. But starting, and this may be why it ties back into this white page thinking, looking at a project from the front and trying to draw a straight line through it to the end is an uncreative process. You don't want to do that process. That sounds boring. Like, every decision's already been made and you're just going to be perfect and it's going to go all the way through. That's the opposite of creativity. Creativity is about trying things out and going, that didn't work. And this is my best guess. And maybe working with somebody else to come together and make something better than you could have made on your own, and all these other creative parts of the process that if you get done with it and turn around and look at the process, anybody can make a straight line all the way through it. But it is that going through the process and bumping into things and running at the wall and all these parts, that is what you're getting. In some ways, that's what you're getting paid to do. You're getting paid to make better mistakes and learn your lessons so that you don't run at the wall next time. Like, oh, I realized if I find the edge and just kind of feel around, the door will be there somewhere. And now you put that in your belt and you pull that out when you need it. All right, we're in the dark. What do we do? Okay, well, don't run at the wall. I tried that. That hurts, right? Okay, don't go backtrack. You got to find your way out. That's creativity. The creativity is so hard to like explain and talk about, and you have to almost use analogy to do it. But to me, this dark room is very much becoming this metaphor of understanding that if you mess up, it's not your fault. The room's dark. It's hard. And everybody around you should know that. And most of all, you should know that. You should know that when there's a mistake made or messed up, it's an opportunity to learn a better way out. It's an opportunity to learn a better way to find the door, not a way to beat yourself up, not a way to, you know, be mad at the person delivering the news, because often they're just as mad as you are, or they, you know, it's not their job to be the creative. It's your job.
Right, right.
And well, so I love
this,
that metaphor.
This sort of thing, this happens. I mean, when I first started at Grayscale Gorilla, I thought that process was almost singular to motion design or 3D or whatnot. I didn't expect that process to carry through software. And when I started here and saw how you and Chris interact, I was like, oh, this exact same process exists in software too, because I've seen you guys. And now I'm more, you know, over the past year being way more a part of that process. But in the beginning, it was really kind of funny for me to sit back and like watch you two go through the process of developing a product, because it was a lot like watching a creative director and a producer and a client all mixed into two people and try to navigate through this thing. So it's funny how you can find those similarities in different aspects or different kinds of work.
Yeah, that might need to be an entire podcast one of these days. Now that you're here too, Chad, having your opinion and having your history be a part of how we make products and training too, it doesn't go away. That creative process of having many different opinions, and we're all striving to make it as good as we can. And I think that's something that we do pretty well, is we all know that everyone's coming from a good angle here. Like, I want to make it good. You want to make it good. Chris wants to make it good. And I think, you know, first of all, to say that it does happen everywhere, I think it's awesome. Like, I think that is unclear sometimes, that just the creative process is a mess. And second of all, understand how you work with other people too. I think that is a part of this that we may not have time to dig too deep into today, but understanding who's delivering this message. Is the person giving you feedback really direct and kind of dry? Well, take it with a grain of salt and try not to be offended, because that's just how they talk sometimes. And if the person is always usually pretty quiet and now they seem kind of mad, you might want to pay attention to that one. Like, there might be extra mad, right? Like, understand the relationship between this stuff.
Read the situation.
Yeah. And I'm not great at that, but you know, those are things I got better with over my career, like understanding who's delivering this and who's ultimately, who ultimately is in charge here. And do I listen to, and I know we got to make this a little bit of a shorter episode, but I think we uncovered some things that I'll just tell you, for me personally, something I went through a lot. There were days when it was really easy for me to remove myself from the process and see it from above and understand that my work was just this thing that I wanted to get better. And the days that I got better the fastest were the days when I realized that feedback was a blessing. That feedback, direct feedback about how this thing could be better, if it's delivered by people that have your best interest and the client's best interest, is some of the best feedback you're ever going to get in your entire career. And it's something that is so rare that when you hear it, you have to back up and say, can you repeat that, please? And no, I'm not mad at you. And no, I'm not mad at you for giving me feedback. I've told the story over and over again about the creative director that stood behind me and said, Nick, your work's ugly. But he kept going and told me why. And those were the times in...
That's the key.
Yeah, those are the times in my creative career when I learned the fastest. When I was... The faster I could get through that grieving process of like, okay, that hurt, but also I'm open now, I'm ready. And I'm just going to write this down as if I'm not the person that made it. I'm going to do it. And in fact, and I know we got to wrap up, they do this in schools. I've seen this talked about. What they'll do is, when a critique is happening at schools, the person that did the work is not the one writing the notes down. You partner up. And you write down the notes for other people. So now you're getting a very perfect representation of what the feedback is, but it's not going through your filter. It's going through your buddy's filter. And then at the end, you trade notes. And that, to me, was such a smart way to think of it. In fact, to bring it back to Half-Rez, I think Chris Doe actually did that in one of his classes. I thought that was really smart, because removing yourself as much as possible, I think it's such a... It's such a big part of this. So maybe this is a topic we could jump back into. I know we got to wrap up today, but I think we unlocked a door of how you feel about your work and how you represent your work. And Chad, how you become a better creative director. I consider you one of my favorite creative directors I've worked with. And how do you get to that point? You know, so maybe we started with one topic, but we may have like opened it up to three or four more. Before we wrap up, anybody have any last minute either pieces of advice or tips to remove yourself from your work?
Drinking.
Drinking.
Drinking helps. Take a break. Take a breath. Take a breather.
Yeah. You know, just remember that if you're working in a team, or even if it's just a small team, you're in it together. It's supposed to be fun. And at the end of the day, it's just moving pictures. We're not changing the world. Just knowing, I remember, I know we got to wrap up, but someone told me early in my career, I made a mistake on a job that I thought was just career ending. I thought I was going to get fired. And it was just really, it really hit me hard. I let something get by me. And my boss was like, it's just TV, dude. It's just television commercials. You know, it's not the end of the world. And that just really stuck with me because I was a perfectionist. I was really hard on myself. And when he told me that, I was like, oh yeah, you know what? You're right. It's a job. It's TV commercials, nothing more, nothing crazy. And just a little bit of perspective like that can like help you get through a really stressful time and maybe help you get through that mourning process of your changed idea.
Yeah. For me, like I said, it's just maybe take that. If you can flip that switch where somebody's giving you critique and just think about, well, what would I think about this tomorrow? Just to remove yourself from in the moment. I think the most painful part is the in the moment one. As soon as you can give yourself a little bit of zoomed out perspective of, you know, in a week, am I going to care about this? Well, like, would I have loved this as much tomorrow as I do today? Any perspective will break you out of your brooding cycle that you're currently in of being upset at the current project.
I like that. Hey, we could all use another walk, especially while the weather's still nice. Folks, thanks for listening. If you've been looking at getting into more walks, here's what I'd like to say. Subscribe to our podcast. I know we look really good and Chris's lighting is good. My walls are looking a little bit better. But listen, you should be out walking around listening and consuming this stuff that way. Get a little exercise and then you can think about your work and it all ties together really. And so subscribe, I think, is really what I'm saying. Subscribe to the podcast. that's the ultimate bad tie-in. You want to go for more walks? Subscribe to our podcast. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. And I really do appreciate it. We do get a lot of comments on iTunes and on YouTube. Tons of great comments from last episode as well. If you haven't heard last episode, we got a lot of great feedback on YouTube and in iTunes as well. So definitely go check that one out. And we'll see you at Half Res if you come in there. And we'll also see you at in another Grayscale Gorilla podcast coming next week. We will talk to you then. Thanks as always for your time and have fun this week. Happy Monday and happy rendering. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.